Hi, and welcome back to Forecast, a show about climate science and climate scientists. I'm Mike White, Nature's editor for climate science. You may have noticed over the past few weeks that I've been asking a lot of my guests about the idea of trying to limit global mean surface temperature warming to no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius. It's an idea that came out of the recent Paris Climate Accords. And there's been a pretty big diversity of opinion on this, from it's a worthwhile thing to pursue, from looking at scenarios to it's more or less a waste of time, or focusing on the number is really missing opportunities, to the dialogue itself. But regardless, the IPCC decided to have the 1.5 topic as a subject of one of its three special reports to be produced within the context of AR6. And one of my previous guests on the podcast, Valerie Maison-Delmotte, is the co-chair of IPCC Working Group 1 and just participated in the first scoping meeting for the 1.5 Celsius report. I asked Valerie to come back on the podcast to give us a quick update on the outcomes from that meeting, with the caveat that the discussions at this stage are entirely preliminary and nothing at all is set in stone. Valerie did give me some insights into primarily how the meeting is the first or one of the first opportunities for the AR6 community to try and change the way that the narrative of IPCC reports is being generated. They're spending a lot of time at the initial framing stages, bringing together all three of the working groups who tended to be integrated almost post-report in the previous work streams, and having everyone working together to try and decide what the questions themselves really should be. So it's a very different process. Most of what we talked about those differences in framing, and less so about the actual results that might come out of the meeting. So I hope after the end of this about 15-minute interview, you'll have a better idea about how the IPCC is approaching their negotiations for AR6 and specifically for 1.5. Valerie Maison-Delmotte, thank you for coming back on the show for a quick chat.
Good evening or good morning.
You were recently at the IPCC scoping meeting on the idea of trying to limit global mean surface temperature change to 1.5 degrees Celsius, which took place August, 15 to 17 in Geneva. Can you give us an overall idea about what we should understand coming out of the meeting, knowing that this is just a preliminary meeting and it's subject to further negotiations and revisions?
So this is the first step in the preparation of this special report. It was an invitation from the UNFCCC and the Paris Agreement. The invitation was accepted during the last IPCC plenary meeting in Kenya last April. And the exact terms are impact of global warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels and related global greenhouse gas emission pathways, in the context of strengthening the global response to the threat of climate change, sustainable development, and efforts to eradicate poverty. And of course, the scoping meeting was really focused on making sense of all of these terms from a scientific perspective, developing collective brainstorming to design a report structure, so an outline, titles for chapters and keywords, bullet points. And this outline will be released publicly a few weeks before the next IPCC plenary meeting, so before end of September. And it may be modified by the panel during this plenary meeting.
One thing that really struck me when I was looking at the approach for the scoping meeting and the participants is that, like we talked about when we were at the IPCC meeting several months ago, you really are bringing together at the initial stages all of the different working groups. Can you describe a little bit how that process worked? And in your experience, was it more difficult or more fruitful or more challenging or just kind of different than the way that the working group one discussions on their own typically go?
This was a very interesting part of the process because, as you said, we are forced by this invitation to work across the three working groups and also the task force on inventories. And so we established a steering committee, a scientific steering committee consisting of the co-chairs of these four groups, the three working groups and the task force on inventories. And the chair of the steering committee was Thelma Krug, one of the vice chairs of the IPCC. The first step was to circulate a call for nominations and flagging expertise areas. And so we really worked With a broad approach across research fields. For this call, we received around 600 nominations, and we selected 80 experts with a 50-50 distribution between developing and developed countries, a fair distribution of the expertise areas, and I think a little more than 30% of women, which is not bad and reflecting the initial proportion in the nominations. And so we had, as you mentioned, a broad range of expertise perspectives around the table for this scoping meeting. We didn't organize a top-down approach in that we didn't provide a skeleton of an outline. We prepared a background document which starts by all the uncomfortable policy questions and then a number of challenges associated with this invitation. We organized collective brainstorming in different breakout groups in three steps and plenary discussions. And, you know, it's like a bet when you organize it that way. And the result was extremely successful that we managed to converge to an outline where the various elements can be addressed in a balanced perspective, considering, you know, as usual, opportunities and challenges and risks and benefits of avoided impacts, of strengthening the responses, etc. Maybe more importantly, I think this is also a first step in a broader IPCC process. We will have two more special reports to organize, and there will be again across working groups. And then we are also now preparing the scoping of the sixth assessment report, where we also have to have in mind the integration across the working groups. So it's a very nice start, I think, for this cycle, so that we can work across the traditional working groups right from the beginning.
I know that when I look at what's been published in journals like Nature and Nature Climate Change in particular, a lot of the focus from the physical science community has been about the feasibility or the mitigation pathways that would be required in order to get down or to stay at 1.5. And there's been debate about whether or not this is sort of just a waste of time because we've already emitted the allowable carbon budget. So that's one issue that seems to be in the forefront from the kind of working group one side. But I'm curious about what are the issues that are at the forefront for people who are more from the working group three background? Are they also talking about those issues or do they bring a very different set of concerns to the table?
We had perspectives from the three working groups. So one part is, you know, thinking about impact and avoided impact. What can we say? What do we know for a given amount of global warming? And that's across working group one and two. Then you mentioned mitigation pathways, and that's across working group one and three, because it's both a matter of climate response at the global scale and then the underlying drivers and the mitigation pathways or the scenarios compatible with a given long-term target, including an overshoot or no overshoot. But then there's also all the way, or there are also all the questions in between. So how can we strengthen the response to the threat of climate change, considering both adaptation and mitigation? What are the options? How can these different options be implemented? There's a whole set of knowledge from studies of transformation. There's a whole set of knowledge from case studies at various space and time scales. And so we also designed the scoping meeting to have experts of these various fields so that we could design jointly the best possible structure to take this knowledge into account. So it's going a little beyond the usual assessments of working group three and strengthening different aspects of what's traditionally in working group three. And finally, we also had social scientists in the process. And we wanted to have a possibility to think about responses to climate change in the context of the 2030 Sustainable Development Targets, ethics, equity issues. We had also two external scientists, one nominated by UNESCO from the Committee from UNESCO on Ethics. She's a philosopher from Canada. Another one was nominated by the International Science Social Science Council. And so she's a social scientist working on climate change. So they are Marie-Hélène Parisot and Suzanne Moss. And they were also very helpful in thinking across disciplines. and integrating the ethics and equity dimensions from the beginning.
So they were brought in almost as external consultants to bring in a novel perspective.
In the scientific steering committee, exactly. And we did not pick up one person. We asked an international organization to make a suggestion for us.
One issue that can arise in this style of meeting where you have sociologists and physical scientists is just the inevitable vocabulary or difference in jargon among the communities. What is the state of that? I mean, I guess these communities have been working together for a while, but typically more separate in the working groups. Do you feel like they're now more able to communicate on a easy basis?
I think so. And the fact that we organized the meeting in small breakout groups, it facilitates a direct exchange, the possibility to provide clear explanations when there's an ambiguity in the discussion. We also could find some of the participants as what I can call bridge scientists. So those who have been working in different fields and are able to communicate the basic concepts that are discussed easily to the others. I also think that some of the previous IPCC reports helped to do this cross-working group or traditional disciplinary field bridge. For instance, the special report on extreme events was built across Working Group 1 and Working Group 2, and you can feel that this has also changed the approaches in the scientific community. The risk framework, for instance, can be applied across the different working groups.
I think that one of the things that came out of the SREX report that you mentioned, which was, I think, led at least in part by Sonia Senevaradne, was the issue of global droughts and changes in aridity emerged as being just very difficult to grasp, even from the more recent observational period of, let's say, the past few decades. And there's an ongoing debate about whether or not there is an increase in droughts or where the increase in droughts is taking place. Are there similar issues that you feel are arising in the discussions around 1.5, where there are just major disagreements or major uncertainties that are making it difficult to get at this question of the feasibility, the practicality, and the most appropriate mitigation pathways to get there, if we are going to try to get there?
I think it's not feasible in a few seconds to give a comprehensive answer to your question. You raised a very precise point about drought and about metrics and natural or anthropogenic effects. But I think there are issues in the same way in different aspects. And for instance, for mitigation, you have top-down approaches based on integrated assessment models, and you have bottom-up approaches from case studies. One issue is to manage to combine these different approaches, for instance. And this is just one example amongst many. There are clearly research gaps. I mentioned the framework of the Sustainable Development Targets and climate policies, responses, impacts. There is clearly a need for more studies and more peer-reviewed literature on these aspects.
What, if anything, did you find to be surprising coming from the Working Group 2 and 3 perspective?
The approach about abrupt change and tipping points, this was clearly discussed across working groups and with maybe more attention on this aspect than I would have expected from the beginning. So an approach about non-linearities in the different components of climate change, impacts, regional impacts, but also abrupt change in responses.
Do you mean a societal response, a non-linear societal response?
No, exactly, including the human responses.
Is it things like a change in location, so climate change forcing a mass migration, or is it something else that people are talking about here?
It was about the history of major changes in our societies, looking at historical examples, transitions like from horses to cars, so thinking about the conditions for deployment of new technologies, examples from the past, and how to use this approach to assess opportunities for deployment of new technologies, of new solutions, of new social responses in the future.
I suppose one likely candidate would be the abandonment of fossil fuel-powered transportation and moving towards renewable energy and electrification of transport. Was that talked about at the meeting at all?
It was discussed amongst many, many other things. And the discussion was not on precise, detailed points for the content of the report, because this belongs to the authors, of course, in the next steps, but more about how to frame it so that there is space for classical approaches to mitigation, but also new approaches for mitigation and for implementation of various options. So basically what I'm trying to say is that we also in fact discussed about rates of change in a way. when I mentioned, you know, abrupt change and feasibility of transformation, in a way, this is discussing both the rate of climate change and the capacities for different rates of adaptation or mitigation in different directions.
That's an interesting point, and I think that one, it's not really discussed that much, this idea of nonlinearities in the physical and in the social systems. That's quite interesting. Who are the people that are leading forward that discussion, do you think?
It will emerge from the research community, because this week I was also at another IPCC meeting organized with Provia and Future Earth in Stockholm, Sweden. And it was about the lessons from the AR5 and how to address the risks in the AR6. In this second meeting, I could see many of the scientists from different fields also assessing with different approaches this issue about the rates of changes, the ability to deploy responses at the adequate rate, especially having in mind adaptation strategies. So I can see that this is being explored by different scientific communities, but also by practitioners when they design adaptation responses, for instance.
What is your sense about the level of optimism in the room across the communities when people are thinking or talking informally about whether or not society as a whole has a decent chance of staying at or below 1.5?
Oh, we actually didn't address it like that during the meeting. So it was not about optimism or pessimism or lack of will. It was not about feasibility. It was really taking this invitation as an opportunity to challenge, to question the way AR5 was framed, the existing knowledge, also to identify the knowledge gaps, as I mentioned. It was really a way to frame our questions differently and not assessing, not designing something to assess feasibility with a simple answer, but more in-depth conditions for deployment, the conditions for feasibility, and the response to climate change and climate change in a broader context, especially with respect to poverty eradication and equity. It's different from the question you asked. In many aspects, answers to these questions do not yet exist, but they may emerge when we map sort of the opportunities, the risks, the benefits in a multidimensional framework, not just trying to provide a simple answer to a complex question. And I believe that framing the report in this way will be a strong incentive also for the scientific community and a broad community to bring their knowledge to this assessment, either contributing as authors, but also contributing as producing new knowledge, new peer review literature in time for the assessment, because the timeline is very challenging, and also as reviewers, so that we provide a very solid and mature assessment to the question proposed by the Climate Convention and the Paris Agreement.
Valerie Maison-Delmotte is working to fundamentally reframe the way that IPCC raises their questions and tries to answer those questions, in this case for 1.5. Valerie, thank you so much for the catch-up.
Thank you very much.
That was my quick chat with Valerie Maison-Delmotte from LSCE and IPCC Working Group 1 co-chair, following the recent August scoping meeting on the idea of keeping global warming below 1.5 degrees Celsius. As always, comments are welcome via iTunes. You can find the podcast there and subscribe so you'll get things right away as opposed to having to wait as much as 2 or 3 hours. It's also available on Stitcher and Google Play Music. You can reach me at forecastpod@gmail.com or also via the show notes at forecastpod.org. Talk to you soon.